Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-host
Heng Shi.
But it doesn't say what it was, and every other single note in the patch was specific. I went and checked the Civilpedia. It's like, fine, I'll go into the game, I'll figure it out. Gosh. Yeah, that's just gonna be the bumper intro now. There's a whole bunch of us saying gosh. It'll be great.
My god. I'm just imagining like a cacophony of goshes. Gosh.
Yes, we have to have a variable rate and spam it.
gosh.
Hey everybody, this is episode 184. I'm your host, Matt Jin, and I'm joined by a bunch of gosh.
Gosh darn.
Joined by regular panel co-host Dan Q.
Let's play recording a podcast. Woo!
Makalua? Really?
I broke Mackie.
Brendan, you're speechless.
It only took 7 years.
All right, we'll get back to you later. The Mean Team?
My best exploits are undocumented.
And guest co-host Pen Key.
Do you ever feel like you joined a conversation about 5 minutes late?
Every episode of every podcast ever?
I like when you take it uncomfortably the wrong way, and then it just ruins the mood of the conversation between the other two people.
That's not what we were talking about.
I really wanted to jump in and say that's what she said, but I don't know if that's appropriate.
So we've never done that before. Totally inappropriate. We hold ourselves above that standard.
Gosh.
Wait. Does that then mean we have standards, though, if we hold ourselves above a standard?
Yeah, but by standard, we only mean like a flag. Like, there's literally a flag that we carry around, and we hold ourselves physically above it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He understands.
So we're not really carrying it around. We're just kind of kicking it across the plains.
Oftentimes, when we defeat somebody else, we throw their standard on the ground and trample it, and therefore we are above it.
But that's somebody else's standard, not ours.
Oh, it's still a standard, though. And now it's ours, because we took it from them.
We hold ourselves to a lower standard, but we're above it.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. I think that's an excellent scope.
Speaking about aiming low.
Is that the transition into this topic? Oh, my gosh. So. All right. Well. So we have a little patch, a small fall patch, public beta. I'm sure it's not important. Thread started by Big Den on the...
Yeah, he's not important, right?
Not surprising, obviously, but I felt like announcing who started the thread anyway.
Well, yeah, anybody that calls himself Big Den is obviously not that important.
Clearly not.
As part of his introductory message, Big Den, Dennis Strickley, producer on Brave New World, said, "We've scouted the forums."
Correct the puns.
Yeah, they've been listening to Polycast, obviously. Yeah. The puns are increasing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we seek to do here, is to increase the usage of puns by the general public.
It is.
It's in our charter.
User interface. New map options on a setup game menu. Now DLC map packs are grouped into folders without having to go to advanced setup. A couple warmonger AI improvements. 4 different levels of concern displayed by the AI. Air combat preview. Added preview of damage of your bombarding air unit would take. So many changes to balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about the building up of warmonger threats? It's more exponential than linear now, so it shows minor, major, severe, and critical. If you have a common opponent, it's only half the penalty. So like the game I was playing earlier where I was Maria and both I and Montezuma were attacking Darius, he wouldn't be so pissed if I took out part of Darius.
Mm-hmm. Although one thing I've noticed is that he might not be as mad and you might not see it show up in the list, but once he, for some reason, gets mad at you, it'll start popping into the list.
You know, I feel like, I mean, that's always been the case. Like, AIs have always been perfectly willing to hide all the things that piss them off about you until they've decided to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't see the shitstorm coming soon enough, basically.
I think half might not be enough, but it's a step in the right direction, for sure.
I like the tenet change, the gunboat diplomacy tenet change, which makes military units 50% more effective at intimidating city-states. As a person who plays on Immortal, it was a pain in the butt to get any city-states ever to be like, oh no, you're military.
Now as a person who plays on DD, it's impossible. Because realistically, to intimidate a city-state, because Dan loves to do that, on DD, I mean, you have to, like, brutally overspam units because the AIs all have insane number of units, even though they're not using them.
I had one game where the runaway AI on the other continent just had such a big military that it literally intimidated every single city-state on the map every single turn, no matter where its units were. It was basically impossible to ever catch up with it with any city-state because it was getting the gunboat diplomacy bonus against all of them every turn.
Yeah. Go along with that, with the beta patch update, the score for being able to bully a city-state, since we're talking about it, is now more determined, love that, by military units near the city-state, and less determined by players' global military ranking.
Yeah, that was a change I was thinking about as soon as I got to the point in that game where the other civ was just bullying everybody every turn. It's like, this seems wrong.
Yeah, who would do that? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Man.
So now, not only can you bully better with gunboat diplomacy, but you have to actually drop your military around those city-states for that to kick in. So, yeah, the guy on the other continent's not going to be able to bully necessarily as much because it's still determined by global ranking, but you'll have more of a shot at bullying if you drop a bunch of units near them.
Futurism, level 1, now plus 250 tourism from each great writer, artist, or musician created instead of 100. Good.
Still better. Not quite useful enough, but better.
Oh, to talk about my favorite thing that they did with the social policies, I really love the change to Commerce Tree with the Mercenary Army social policy that allows the purchasing of Landschnecks. Namely, I like the fact that they get to move as soon as you buy them. So you can have a totally empty city and have enemies coming and knocking at the gates and then just buy, like, 6 Landschnecks all in the same city and have them go out and attack on the same turn. It's awesome.
Added that one in and took the trade union's effect and moved it to with wagon trains.
Now wagon trains not only gives you a little bit more gold on your land-based trade routes, but you also get the cheaper road rail maintenance.
Which I think is a much-needed buff to commerce in general. It's like getting an extra policy in the tree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people didn't like commerce in general.
Yeah, this will be great as Venice.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi, you were going to attack me? Not so much.
Hello, I have 8 guys now.
And in commerce, they also moved the double trade mission gold from the finisher to entrepreneurship, which also gets you still great merchants 25% faster. And, oh, look at that, requires wagon trains.
Mm-hmm. Moved it from the finisher to one step before the finisher, so I guess it depends on which way you go. I mean, I always prefer to go for the extra happiness first from protectionism. I don't find the finishers need to be super powerful all by themselves, because I know some people are complaining that now the finisher's, like, not as good. But the finisher is just, well, whatever is the last social policy you take, the finisher just makes it that much better.
Speaking still of social policies, patronage, boost city state trade bonus from plus 1 to plus 2 gold on Merchant Confederacy, and of course that's for trade routes with city states. Early game. I mean, if that's all you can get to or all that you can reasonably defend, that's nice.
If you have a Merchant Confederacy early game, I would like to assert that you're doing it wrong.
Oh, that's why I said if that's all that you can reach as opposed to another civilization. It doesn't make me quite as sad, then, that I can reach an AI proper, although I'd still be sad, obviously.
It's also pretty good with the Freedom Tier 3 that gives you relations boosts with city-states that you have a trade route with.
It's basically just, here's a little extra gold for going to city-states versus science, tourism, and more money.
Yeah, to me, I mean, establishing a trade route with a city-state, now, if they have, as a quest, they would like you to connect the trade route, and that's a city-state you're trying to curry the favor of, okay, then I'm a little more inclined, but I'd probably just go ahead and establish that trade route for that purpose, and then when it came up for renewal, there's a better option out there, right? Let's see.
I like this change in theocracy. Temples increase city gold output by 25% instead of 10%. All right.
And now you only need to be producing 10 gold from the city before that policy pays for the upkeep costs of the temple.
Yay!
Yes.
Yeah, but if you were going into that tree, you were going piety anyway, so you wanted the temple. So it's just like more cash. Okay.
And you still have the +3 gold from holy sites remaining, too.
I have a game that I was just playing where I actually built like 3 holy sites because William kept sending profits into my land.
All right, and yes, profit.
They still produced 3 bonus gold.
Oh, wait, so they sent profits and they hadn't even like used one of their 4 spreads?
Yeah, they hadn't
probably sending him in to convert him.
Only hey, you want massive amounts of great generals? Go honor.
Oh, yeah. 50%? Good grief.
Yeah, warrior code got boosted from 25% to 50%. I think that's mostly because of the math involved, because when you gain experience, you're gaining very little experience, so 25% of a tiny number isn't really much.
Especially if it's rounded.
Yeah, because they all get rounded because they're all ints. They're all integer math. So 25% of 5 is the same as 25% of 4. 25% of 2 is, well, don't even bother.
Yeah.
And at the same time, of course, navigation school got bumped up to 50% for great admiral points.
And also under exploration, Merchant Navy now provides +4 culture and +4 production in the city with the East India Company.
Not everybody remembers to build East India Company.
Should.
East India Company is awesome. Like, anytime I'm doing any kind of gold-based game, I'm always like, which city gets the East India Company?
Yeah, where do you want all that money to go? Because East India Company gives you lots of nice money. Ethics, the policy and aesthetics.
Don't need ethics.
So, yeah, speaking of don't need ethics, you no longer have the -10% social policy cost modifier there. It is now cultural exchange. So your tourism modifier for open borders, shared religion, and trade routes are all buffed by an extra 15%. Now gives bonuses to open border and trade routes. Basically, you can use the effective finisher for the aesthetic culture tree, basically, to be the better influencer.
I don't understand. You get stuff from ethics in this game? That's not very realistic.
This is gameplay, Phil, not reality.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Phil, this isn't Mafia.
At Freedom, we can both bonuses from Arsenal of Democracy. And I was saying before we started the live stream, why is it that everything else in the patch note tells us what it is? It's like, this is a little scavenger hunt. Go figure out what the weakening actually means. So now it's +15% hammer production when building military units instead of +25. And instead of +20 influence for military unit gifts to city states, it's +15.
The side of it that lets you build units should just disappear.
It seems units, really strange to me that Freedom would have one of the best military unit production bonuses out of all the Civs.
Yeah.
They should buff the Foreign Legion ability, because I want an excuse to take it more often.
What, 6 Foreign Legions?
Yeah.
Just like, because?
We need like 10 Foreign Legions, just because.
Yeah. Just 12 Foreign Legions.
Stronger, too.
Speaking of now taking something, under order, Iron Curtain now boosts yields on internal trade routes by 50%, and on water routes, 100% modifier becomes 150%. So effectively, those only go up by 25% from 200% to 250%. But this is so much better than a free courthouse upon city capture. I'm pretty sure we railed on this earlier this year.
Yeah, well, the free courthouse on city capture was based on you only got it free if you chose to annex right away. So, yeah. Stupidest policy ever.
And it's a tier 3, isn't it? It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That too.
That's
it's
a
like
rail
wasting
now.
All
three?
Of your time. I could see it as a tier 1.
Yeah. But now we get an extra 50% boost for internal trade routes for your food and your production. That sounds better.
I like how they had to give us a little math lesson there. Effectively, this only go up by 25%.
Yeah.
It's just unnecessary. Why don't you tell us the exact amount the previous things were nerfed, and you can leave that out if you're trying to save text.
I need maps to save? What?
What?
Nah, I think they were probably just
trying I know.
Make sure that people didn't go, oh, it's 150, so it's going to become 300%. No.
Space Flight Pioneers, also level 3, we get rid of the +10 science in the capital and add a free great engineer or great scientist instead.
Yay, free three great scientists. I mean, what?
It's basically the build Hubble now policy.
Yeah, here's one free Hubble telescope. There you go. Bye-bye.
Woo!
Speaking of the spaceship birds, the hammer costs on those doubled.
Yay!
Didn't gold cost go up too?
Yeah, they also doubled. Because gold cost is based on hammer cost.
Was it really that much easier than the other victory conditions?
Well, it's also why put in level 3 tenants for order for, you know, using great engineers for spaceship parts at 750 hammers, which is like half the cost of a wonder at that point. Or purchase them with cash when you've got or enough gold per turn, likely, by that point, to buy them in one turn.
So, you can now rush things that take you 5 turns to build with great engineers. Congratulations.
The other thing is that the spaceship factories might actually be worth building. Crazy.
Dun, dun, dun!
Now you're just being silly.
Yeah, like a late-game building that might be worth building? What?
Yeah.
Of course, when you have the free Hubble, you already got the booster anyway, to everyone. But, you know.
Coming in the next patch, a reason to build medical labs.
I wish.
City-state influence. Cleaned up influence calculations when a city-state is killed to ensure a future liberator will be the undisputed ally and receive the intended reward. I don't know about undisputed, but...
It'll be disputed about half a turn later.
I do like this thing with the Congress. When an embargo and an AI player is proposed, that player will always use all of its delicates toward preventing the embargo. Duh.
Probably could have went with a slightly more subtle change. Like, when an embargo on an AI player is proposed, that player will always use enough delegates to prevent the embargo, not all.
But something. Because sometimes they're like, nope, I want this other thing to pass, I don't care. Why'd you guys embargo me?
If they've got sufficient intelligence, you know, like, for example, you're sharing an ideological tenet, so you have an idea of how they would vote, then it would make more sense for me to the AI to use only enough. But if they're not certain about something and they really want to block it, then I could still see them, like, using it all because they want to be all in. They want to ensure that it is blocked.
Yeah, but you can ensure that it's blocked if you've got enough votes to outvote everybody and then still have extra.
Like, it seems like as somebody who has, like, the second most votes and gets to propose, you could easily game it just by constantly proposing to embargo the vote leader, and then they're just going to blow all their votes every time on preventing the embargo.
Unless you're out of things to propose, though. I mean, there's better uses for your Congress time.
Well, it depends on whether or not the vote leader is bullying you or on good terms with you, you know?
Well, if they hate you anyways.
If they hate you, you might as well just say, hey, embargo forever.
Yeah, I know you have 75% of all votes total, and you only need to use, you know, a small portion of it to beat everybody else's votes, but screw you.
Now you're using them all to stop an embargo that isn't ever going to pass.
Religion changes.
You know, just the other day, or another podcast, we were talking about why isn't there something for copper, iron, and salt, for example? Oh, hey, look. New pantheons. Earth Mother, plus one faith from copper, iron, and salt. Thank you.
No bad jokes about Mother Sphere, please. Next.
About good ones.
God King, plus one culture, faith, gold production, and science from the palace. That could really add up.
Yeah, I really like that as Venice.
It's nice if you don't have anything else around.
I was about to say, screw you guys.
Yeah.
Taking all my other stuff.
I mean, it's nice if there's nothing else around. As long as there's something out there, you can always get more of some of that.
Sometimes you just get a start and there's just nothing.
Yep. So the choice is the plus 10% growth or God King.
Sun God, plus one food from bananas, citrus, and wheat. Hey.
Yeah, that was necessary.
Because what we needed was more food from those piles.
Yeah, two out of three of those are granary-based. Yeah, that was unnecessary.
No, I like it. Sometimes you have those cities and there's a bunch of, like, especially if you were Brazilian, you had to put someplace in the jungle. You might want to have your food tiles be better if you didn't have any good, clear grassland tiles to farm nearby. So
this actually makes bananas even worse to plantation. Because if you keep the jungle, you'll get the science, and now you'll have 3 base food plus granary plus the sun god. So, yeah.
I really wish that they would just give up and let us build unique improvements on wrong tiles. Like, let me build terrace farms on sheep. I don't even care that there are sheep there, you know? Just forget the sheep. Kill all the sheep. Who needs the bananas? Let's just build Brazilwood Camp.
Artificial intelligence. There's a lot under custom AI per Civ, and most of that has to do with star biases that, hey, actually have some rational connection to their unique ability. No, really. But I wanted to mention specifically the AI for Indonesia. Doubled the fertility on lucrative sites that are not on the same continent as previous cities. This should help Indonesia to better use its unique ability. Yes, it will. Can we do something about the unique unit?
I like the unique unit. What's your problem?
The only thing I wish for the unique unit is because a human player, if they have the resources and the time, they're just going to disband all the really crappy ones, unless they have, like, tons and tons of iron. What I'd prefer is if every single one of the promotions that it got had a good side and a bad side, kind of like how, what is it, Ambition gives plus 50% offense, minus 20% defense, instead of some of them being just good and some of them being just bad.
Yeah, it'd probably balance it out, but that's the thing, once you start trying to play that zero-sum game, then all the bonuses start beginning really bland.
Brazil. They will stop automated workers will stop removing the jungle unless there's a resource on it, but we'll still build the Brazilwood camps, and now the AI will go, hey, site's near jungle for Brazil. That's better.
Yes, now if only the Iroquois would stop chopping their forests.
Yeah.
It seems to be working out for them pretty well, though.
Yeah. It's like we have this unique building that gives us lots of hammers.
You know what I wish they
do? Let's chop it anyways.
What I wish they do is, in my Immortal games lately, the Celts have been immediately chopping their forests near their capital with their free worker they start with, so they don't even get a pantheon.
That's, wow.
It's the thing, when you start having a lot of different civs with a lot of different gameplay perspectives, you have to start doing a lot of different custom AIs. This civ's supposed to be super powerful, unfortunately.
Yeah, the other ones they've done, like Morocco, will now look better at the deserts, you know, and Inca will go for the hills more often. I don't think they need to tweak Spain. I think Spain already got the message about natural wonders.
Natural wonders, awesome. Go, go, go. Actually, I think for Spain, I guess one of the things is if they doubled up the natural wonders bonuses first when calculating whether or not it's a nice location versus just going, well, that's just a, you know, plus 5 culture right now versus looking at it as a plus 10. Because it doesn't technically in-game, even playing as Spain, count as doubled until you settle it and get it into your territory. I worry that the AI Spain just sees it as the basic rather than as the doubled.
I hope they do see it that way, because, I mean, like, the same thing happens with the UI for, like, Pantheon bonuses. You know, if you've got religious idols, it will not show the plus one culture, plus one faith, unless that tile is inside your territory and you have the Pantheon in the city.
My favorite, never rebase aircraft to a city being raised.
Sir, do you really want us to land the plane there? It's on fire. Yes. I insist you land the plane there immediately. Okay.
The runway's on fire.
Sir, I don't know how much longer I can stay landed here. Stay there.
Are you upset because I slept with your daughter? Stay there. No.
Probably.
On the zero, Civ-specific balance. Both Ed Beach and Dennis Shirk, when they were on Polycast episode 178 over the summer, mentioned that Germany and Japan were being looked at for changes. And here they are, at least as far as this public beta patch goes. Zero no longer requires oil. Okay.
It's a wood fuel aircraft. It's a wood fuel aircraft now. Mm-hmm.
Samurai can build fishing boats. I would love to see the historical evidence for this. That would be awesome.
Actually, somebody did post about this, and I specifically brought this up because I knew that this would be a topic. Somebody has a source that says Tenkara is a type of recreational fly fishing that originated in Japan at least as long as 430 years ago, when anglers discovered they could dress their flies with pieces of fabric and use them to fool the fish. The art became more refined as the samurai, who were forbidden to practice martial arts and sword fighting in the Edo period, found this type of fishing to be a good substitute for their training. So there actually is a historical backing to letting samurai build fishing boats.
Hello, fly fishing boats versus fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's recreational. That's not going to be feeding people. But okay, at least it's not as completely out as I thought it was.
Sometimes samurais need a day job, too. It provides flavor to Japan. So,
yeah,
it's good.
Oh, flavor fishing boats and fish. I see what you did there.
I like the fact that they can build the fishing boats without, like, vanishing. When I first heard that you could embark units, I was like, well, then the workers are going to build fishing boats. But no, apparently we still have separate units for that eat themselves. But yeah. Now we don't, if you're Japan.
Yeah.
A new additional effect for Bushido. So we still have units fight as though they were at full strength even when damaged, but now plus one culture from fishing boats and plus two culture from atolls. Oh, that's actually my favorite change.
Yeah, because they also gave Japan the ocean start bias, which means they'd be more likely to have them. So it's another thing they can use.
Unless somebody disables start bias. I mean, really, who would
Dan.
Dan. Is there someone else named Dan that does this? What a strange coincidence.
Uh-huh.
Germany adds a unique building. Can I join the me and teen club of not pronouncing things properly again? Is it Hans?
I think it's Hansa.
Hansa.
All right. Hansa. Replaces the bank. Includes bank bonuses. Well, I would hope if it replaces the bank, it at least, you know, gives us the bank bonuses. Okay, good. Plus 5% production per city-state trade route across your civilization, not just cities that have this unique building.
Well, that's one way to encourage city-state trading.
There was a bug with it when it first launched where it was adding plus 5% production, food, commerce, hammers for city-state trade routes.
Oh, and they also boosted the camp conversion rate to 67%. That's kind of a meh. I'm more interested in this unique building.
Look, anything that gets me more hand axes in the early game as Germany, I'm happy with.
Yeah.
More hand axes. More.
More hand axes.
Oh, speaking about zeros, there's zero unlimited stacks.
Oh, Bavarian units. Is that what you're talking about?
Zero unlimited stacks.
I was like, where are we going to... Yes, okay. New stacking limits on air units in cities. Starts at 6, increase to 10 when you add an airport. I'm surprised this took this long.
Yeah, honestly.
Probably. Felt like I heard really early in development when they were talking about how air units worked. I thought they were talking about limiting it to 4 per city, and then the game came out and it wasn't.
They did this experiment in Civ 4, too, and as it turns out, unlimited air units on one tile was a problem then, too.
Crazy! Tag your force on the city on your porter.
At least in Civ 4, there was some precedent for it, where, you know, you could have unlimited axemen in one tile, and that was pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's arguably less overpowered there, where there was no stacking limit. Otherwise, you are correct, but it was still a problem. And that was only more so in Civ 5, when you can't stack other things that way.
It should also speed up some turns.
Actually,
what's taking so long?
Next, it's not going to speed up the turns.
No, yes, it will increase the turn time. I'm talking about from the human player, moving all their freaking air units into one city.
There's that too.
I think it would have an impact. You're just going to build enough air units either way.
Yeah, this will actually boost wide a bit. Because
you're going to need more cities to stack all your air force in.
Exactly.
I don't know. You have a couple cities and you're at like 20, 30 aircraft. That's.
You could always just buy carriers.
Yeah.
Yep, carriers will have some sort of use again. Well, even you can build a carrier in a coastal city and just have, you know, some of the air units on the carrier and some of them in the actual city.
Yeah, that's a classic strategy as well.
Especially if you have multiple carriers in the neighborhood.
Canna says it in the chat, at least the AI can't lose its whole air force when somebody does a tank blitz.
Yeah, there is that.
That's always a fun play.
That is actually a nice balance point for this. Nukes are not going to be nearly as powerful as they were before. Because you can't wipe out somebody's air force in one shot.
I don't think I have to be filled to tell you it'll still be fun.
Oh, it'll still be fun. Just not as powerful as before.
Well, what they should do then is just simply buff them to compensate. Well,
is there a limit to nuke stacking? Does ask Canis Albinus. I don't think so, because they count as missiles.
I wonder about atomic bombs, though.
Yeah, I think they still technically count as missiles, even though they use a bomber.
Can't you land them on carriers, though?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. It seems strange, but...
I haven't tried multi-stacking atomic
bombs. Sir, launch the missile onto the carrier. What?
There's not really much incentive to stack a ton of nukes.
Yeah.
You kind of want to hit different places with them.
Of all the AI changes, though... The DLAI thing makes me smile the most. For instance, the AI now understands how to put things on your side of the table.
Well, finally. AI is in third grade.
Yeah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Okay.
But never ask for strength
that the AI understands how to do so effectively. So we'll see. But
baby steps, Phil. Baby
yes.
steps.
Baby steps. Yes, yes, but I would like to point out the turns that I have finished completing a luxury that would give me the second one of it. All of my Declaration of Friendship AIs have actually asked for a trade rather than asked for it outright since that change. They've all gone to, hey, I notice you've got one of these. Can I have it? And I'll give you something for it.
Yeah, and the non-allied AIs now give slightly more reasonable deals for your luxuries in terms of gold per turn. 7 now instead of 6.
Woohoo! And have the AI accept totally even trades with the human.
Yes. Finally.
Ah, let's have another chorus of hallelujah.
Meow, 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 meow. Although I didn't want them to get smart about the open borders thing as far as it goes to culture victories.
The cost of open borders is no longer going to get massively reduced in the DLAI. It says, don't give us such a huge 90% discount on open borders with friendly players. That would be the 50 gold per turn when friendly. Reduce it only to 65%.
And also on borders, unlike the AI trying to expand theirs, changed minimum settle fertility to 20,000, up from 5,000, to keep AIs from settling worthless plots.
Finally.
But I liked it when the AI would like expand into the frozen north with no resources except for one fish floating helplessly off the coast.
And still have a tin pop city there somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job, AI. Go sell in Antarctica for us. Thanks.
Well, it makes sense on Deity. If you're going to get that kind of absurd bonuses, then any city is worth your time.
It's like, AI, why did you settle there?
Sheesh.
No, well, why did you settle there?
Sheesh.
The real answer is we don't pay maintenance or have happiness issues.
They're also not real, so...
Yeah.
Maybe some miscellaneous things here. Great people, the abilities of great musician, great writer, great scientist now scale properly based on game speed. But I particularly like the great admirals now have a change port option. If either moving into a port or starting the turn in one, they can consume the rest of their moves to jump to another port city under their control. Wow. So I guess no more, hey, where did you get your great general to spawn? Landlocked.
Oh.
In the lake.
No!
Thank you. That
or
will help.
Ice locked.
Yeah. He roams the fjords alone.
Because no one's stupid enough to build a navy up there.
Now all they need to do is make it so that you can move workboats through ice tiles, then we won't have any more weird pathing in the ocean issues.
No, that's what subs are for.
The submarine floats under the ice and builds a fishing boat on the other side. So this is going to start a whole new strategy of Japan ice-locked.
Yeah.
Walking around ice-locked.
What was that about, sailing on worthless plots again?
Yeah.
That, and can we find a militaristic city-state that will give us samurai?
Yeah.
We're not Japan.
No. Yes.
There you go. Japan just got more important. Speak about more important. Apparently you can't burn down holy cities anymore.
But that's what all I like doing.
But what if I send a great prophet and make it not a holy city anymore?
Yeah, it'll eventually become a holy city again.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you know, 300 turns later.
Yeah, I wish that one wasn't in here, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I don't foresee a need for it.
I mean, I've only run into like 3 times ever where a holy city wasn't also a capital city, so it really just doesn't seem like a very important change to me.
Yeah.
There's another reason why was this put in.
Yeah.
Yeah. One nice change, though, archaeology. They added great works of writing from the hidden antiquity sites in exploration. 30% of the hidden antiquity sites will now be writing-based rather than art-based.
Hmm.
And that's pretty cool, especially because unless you've gone very wide, you're going to start running out of room in your museums and whatnot by the time you start grinding through the hidden antiquity sites. I mean, you've already gone through the normal ones, and now you're in the hidden ones. You're just going to run out of space, but this will make it a little bit easier to manage.
And on top of that, you can use these great works of writing-based ones to burn, just like the great writer political treaties. So even if you don't want them, you can get tons of extra culture just by finding them and digging them up and burning them for culture.
Are you saying that we should burn books? That's what I'm hearing. Burn books. Everybody burn books.
That's what it sounds like.
Speaking of books, research agreements.
Burn research agreements.
No. Research agreements good.
The costs are now based on era. The cost increase should now be more linear to coincide with the gross gold per turn of AI civs, and also slightly cheaper when research agreements can first be used. Both civs will now get the minimum of the two beaker counts to balance out the rich getting richer mechanic weakness, and they will now only be canceled with a declaration of war or by elimination of one of the civs involved. Denunciations no longer cause the research agreement to yield zero beakers upon completion of the agreement.
Mm. Yay.
Good.
Yes.
Plus, stop trying to sign research agreements with that guy that's only got one city left.
Yeah, that's the main value of this to me, is now I can actually sign research agreements with a tech leader without being like, oh, why am I doing this?
Yeah, because on higher difficulty levels, all you're really doing is letting the AI get bigger and further ahead as you're trying to catch up. So at least now, they only get as much as you get.
And it also makes sense from a realism perspective if you're, like, engaged in a research agreement with somebody who barely knows how to ride elephants around. You know, you're probably not going to get much out of it. They're probably going to get a lot more out of it comparatively than you are.
Probably one of the more important changes for the whole full patch, of course, is that tourism starts giving you benefits other than to win the game. So probably one of the more important changes because, yeah, people are concerned. It's like, oh, tourism. Whole new mechanic just to win culture
kind of
victory.
Around.
Yay!
Don't really do anything unless you're specifically doing that.
Yep. So now you get bonuses for science and diplomacy and for conquering. The science one, I could do without, but if you're dominating somebody, you can get an extra 4 science per trade route to them. Now, of course, if you're dominating somebody, you're probably also really far ahead tech-wise, but these numbers are over and above what you would normally get from science in the trade routes. So, yeah, plus 4 science for trade route. If you're getting 0 from it before because you're so far ahead, well, now you get plus 4.
My favorite one is the conquest one, where if you're dominant with them and you conquer their city, there's no unrest time and no population loss.
And even if you're not all the way dominant, you're still getting reductions in both of those.
I think for this one in particular, it's important to read the specifics because it's prefaced with further benefits from tourism when influential with another civ. That's lowercase I, not capital I, because when I first read that, I thought, you mean I got to get to influence for dominant to have any of these effects? No. I shouldn't have phrased it quite like that.
The best part is that it's actually a capital I in the patch notes. So it's
confusing. Yeah, they all start at familiar. So you have to get past the exotic level.
Being exotic gets you nothing except for that your ladies are considered particularly desirable.
Or the men, depending.
Yeah, could be.
So, yeah, they all start at familiar, then go familiar, popular, influential, dominant. Unless you're really just messing around, you're probably never going to see the dominant. Unless somebody got wiped out pretty early and just, like, is sitting on the other side of the planet trying to figure out how to survive.
It'll actually kind of increase the impetus to go and crush little tiny straggler civs that have already been defeated and have, like, 3 cities left on an island somewhere because you won't get the unrest time, so it'll immediately start giving you benefits.
Yeah, just beware, though, especially on the conquest side. No unrest time, no population loss. Yeah, so that AI that's got 40 pop city.
Good luck handling that new unhappiness.
I got your unrest time right here.
Hey, maybe it's an indirect buff to Iron Curtain. Free courthouse, yes, please.
Exactly. Don't mind me as I race the city down anyways. At least you're not going to be mad at me while I do it. Of course, the unrest time is the period of time that you cannot build or do anything in the city. So that is nice, especially for somebody like the Huns, where they burn cities down at twice the rate. So if you keep the higher population, say, at the minus 50% reduction in unrest time and population loss, so a 10-pop city only takes you 5 turns to get rid of the unrest, but you're burning it down at twice as fast, so you can burn it down just in time for the unrest, which means that you will have population left.
And the community can be happy to know that there's already been an update to the beta during the period, so I know they're paying attention. But there's only one thing I want to point out from that specifically. It's a bug that has been fixed but was not ready in time for the 128 build, because when this first public beta came out of the fall patch, it was version 124. So, at least as of this recording, AI embarked civilian units can plunder enemy trade routes. So enjoy.
And of course, the one balance change that came out of that update to the update was that the influence anchor point increase gained from pledge to protect is now 5.
Still so, I'm going to auto-pledge every single city-state.
Yeah. It's still not going to be insta-friendship anymore, but I think I would have preferred if consulate was cut down by 5 rather than pledge to protect was cut down by 5. Because there's still reasons to pledge to protect.
You know what I would prefer is that if they made it so that when you pledge to protect a city-state and then just totally leave them hanging, for like there would be some kind of penalty at all. We're being completely overrun by barbarians. Didn't you say you were going to help us? Yeah, get around to it.
Oh, I was talking about those other civs. If you can't handle barbarians.
Yeah. And really, if the other civs attack you, I mean, I'm just going to say you will pay for this in time and then go about my business.
I think it's important to note for people listening to this that the public beta ran from the 1st to the 7th of October. So you're thinking, why are you guys talking about this if by the time this episode released, public beta is over? Well, you can still use this. Now, there are instructions in the thread in order to how to activate to have these changes, and it will still be in effect after the public beta is over.
And, well, these are the full patch notes. So even though the beta is going to be over, you're going to get the whole damn thing soon enough.
The joke's on us, they scrap the whole thing and just launch something totally different. And like, LOL, you stupid podcast guys.
I see, it's a trick. They want us to pre-evaluate it for them.
Yeah.
Pirates, the railroad industry, and then it's like, let's just do civilization. I mean, I'm assuming you're about to tell me you're rather fearless in that regard as well, but I mean, that is still, I mean, I don't know, I almost want to say, was it hubris to take on something so massive?
Yes, I guess it was.
There is a video on interwebs of Sid Meier.
There is a video on Sid
Meier. That's the only one, actually. But he was Sid Meier talking about basically how he got into game design and, you know, his history with computer gaming and such. It's like a half an hour long, so we can't really touch on everything. It is an interesting view. But the two things that I took away from the early part of it were, one, his first game was programmed in assembly, which is a nightmare. It's like the most bare-bones code language ever that you code, like, microchips with these days. And it was on a cassette tape, which I wish that I had lived in those days. But the second thing is the host that's interviewing him is talking about, well, why is he stuck with strategy games? It is interesting that the strategy genre has had some ups and downs. It had a very big up in the mid-90s, early mid-90s, and it had a pretty big down, you know, early 2000s, and it seems like it's going back up again. And it is interesting that a developer, instead of saying, well, let's go where the money is saying, well, no, this is what I'm good at, this is what I like, and this is what I'm going to do. He is kind of a master at strategy design, you know? There's just so many strategy games that are so diverse that he has made, you know, like Gettysburg was phenomenal. His contribution can't really be understated.
It was okay.
We didn't have a roadmap at that point. We didn't have these genres that we had to stick to, you know. We could just make whatever game we felt like. And, you know, with a game like Pirates, we combined some role-playing and some action and some strategy. And it was, like, those were the good old days when we could kind of, you know, basically say, let's make a game and whatever, you know, whatever topic hasn't been covered yet. I really encourage people to have an interest outside of games. You know, games have to be about something. They can bring their own interest to gaming and expand what we do, not just make games about games that have already been made.
I think that's important. It's one thing to build on something that's already there, you know, like successor titles to, I don't know, this game called Civilization. I think someone's heard of it. But to actually, you know, have it be about something. And I think it's kind of like if you want to write about something, whether it's a book or just a paper. Have it something that you are familiar with or something that you are interested enough to get familiar with and learn about, because then you're going to stick with that, and then you can figure out, well, why is it that I'm interested in this, and how can I make it, in a game aspect, fun for somebody to play? Because you just don't want it to be about learning, period, or just learning about, hey, I learned how to play this game, now I can go play something else. You got to have that replayability to some aspect and feel like that this is something that I would like to do. This is fun. This is a nice distraction from this thing called real life, and it can be engaging.
Wait, games aren't real?
Take a deep breath. Do you want a paper bag? Do you need to...
Wait a minute.
We established this earlier.
I have games on my computer right now. These are definitely real things.
The interviewer, Adam Sessler, at one point said, when did it occur to you that you might be onto something, you know, with strategy? When Sid said...
There was a point at which I could quit my day job.
How very pragmatic of you, Sid. And speaking of old, you mentioned like an assembly on a cassette tape. When Sid talked about that, the original Civilization, where there are 8 to 10 people who worked on it, with him doing most of the programming and under a year of development time, wow. Imagine trying to do that now with a title like Civ. Yeah, I don't think so.
8 to 10 people just for coding.
It was a phenomenal game, too. You know, it's like even for the time, I basically begged my parents to buy a PC just because of Civilization 1. So...
That really continues to drive us. Are we having fun making this game? And that's the best sign to us that it's going to be a fun game for our players. The player is the star.
Just so eloquent, and it says so much with so little. And Sid has a reputation for being someone who, when he has something to say, he's going to say it, and it's going to be very specific. He just doesn't drone on and on and on and on, which is obviously something none of us on this show can relate to. But for Sid...
And on and on and on.
Gosh.
And I think for the reason we actually got Sid to say a fair bit in this video is because the interviewer actually asks a question and then waits for an answer to be given.
What?
Revolutionary new tactic.
What's the point of that?
The Sid Meier who is making a tic-tac-toe game with computer cards, could you even conceive of where you would be personally, where the industry would be, and where sort of your nascent ideas would actually find themselves in the hands of millions and millions of people? I mean, if it didn't occur to you then, when did you think, hey, I might be onto something here?
Some of the comments, there are quite a few. You can read through them, but some of my favorites for, you know, Sid Meier was the start of my gaming addiction. I don't know if he's the starting of my gaming addiction, but he certainly helped solidify it. Someone even said Sid Meier is a legend, even though his games are not my particular cup of tea. And I think that that's kind of like the impression that even if someone, for instance, doesn't know about Star Trek, they've probably heard the expression, beam me up, or beam me up, Scotty. You just know these things. You know what it is that's being referred to. And you say Sid and Sid Meier, and it's like, oh, yeah, he designs games. Well, what games has he designed? Mm-hmm. I don't know. He designs games. Well, how do you know that? Because he's Sid, see?
You know, the one thing I wish he'd stop doing, though, is putting his name at the beginning of games, because I keep, like, going through my Steam games library, like, where's Civ? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Sid Meier, Civilization 5. But no, yeah, putting his name on everything just ruins the alphabetical order of all the things ever.
That's why I put it up in the favorites list.
Well, if you have all his games, then you just have an alphabetical order of his name.
But that's even worse. You just got this giant clump of SIDs.
A clump of SID? Did you get cloning technology done?
Yes. What do you call a flock of SIDs?
Cloning gone wrong?
A crash. It's a crash of SIDs.
Drum Noob had said in the comments, arrest that man. He has stolen months, if not years, of my life by making awesome games. Well, now, just a minute. If he stole them, then it kind of implies he can give them back, which means he is all-powerful.
Or at least powerful in the sense that he can give people time. He can't smite you. I think that's the measure of all-powerfulness. You are all-powerful the moment you can smite someone.
We like the interaction of systems, like the operation, the finances, the competition. We like the way those all kind of work together. So what's a topic that's bigger than railroads but can kind of have this quality of starting small and growing over time, having a number of different aspects and considerations that interact with each other in an interesting way? And we said civilization.
The Civ stats.
Oh, there's a log file. Go read it.
Exactly.
No, in your games library under Civ, under logs, there's an achievements debug log. This has been known about since vanilla, but okay.
easy now.
Find out about the people who died
in
the code.
Topical. This is a topical podcast.
It is topical because Dan only recently found out about it.
I didn't know about it either. You guys were talking about the other day.
Exactly. Anyways, there's an achievements debug log, provided it still exists. You actually do have to turn it on, so it'll start working.
Yeah, look for your config.ini file, and then change logging enabled to equal 1 from 0.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, you can see the progress towards various achievements. Definitely all the ones that require the annoying, how many do I need for this? Because, well, they didn't implement the counter in the achievements unlike other games. You know, when you need to be England and sink 300 and some odd ships or whatever it is, it at least tells you about it.
Yeah, and you look at this file, you'll see this DBG that just means debug. SteamStat means that Steam actually tracks the statistic. And then the number that you see at the end, for example, as a unit, that's like how many times you actually created that particular unit across all of your games. I turned logging on almost, you know, since I started playing the game, but I never really bothered to look at this file until like in the last few days of this recording. Because I was like, oh yeah. I went and I enabled it because someone said, hey, it's kind of cool. And then I probably went and looked at it, and the numbers weren't that impressive because I just started playing the game. So I'm like, who really cares about this? I'm not going to go through, obviously, all the numbers. We'll be here forever and a day. My favorite one to look at was it counts the number of times you have constructed certain wonders in the game. And for me, I've constructed Notre Dame 23 times, the Oracle 25 times, and the Hagia Sophia 24.
There you go. And what's your bullied gold stat?
Yeah.
It is 123,007.
Jesus, what are you doing?
You bully them every single time.
It's a bully.
Why do you do this?
Cash.
Why wouldn't you do this?
You're shooting at
123,000 gold.
The negative consequences are pretty freak minimal because your influence is going to restore. They're going to silly forget after a little while.
Whereas, see, I've only got 2,055.
Probably have like 200.
Some of these statistics, I mean, that's kind of interesting. You know, like how many times have you constructed a particular wonder? How many times have you constructed a particular unit? Tiles discovered? Like, really? I don't really know.
And how many are there?
246,825.
That's it?
That's it? Noob. He doesn't scout very well.
No, he doesn't.
I do scout well. Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yeah, well, how many hours have you actually played the game? See, that's also how it's related to.
I'm not telling
you. Except that play. See, you just don't start making these blanket statements.
Too many.
Of course we do.
That's how many.
I call shenanigans.
Too many.
How many settlers have you made?
2,786.
You spam settlers. It's so bad. Bullies people and then tries to take their land.
And then spam settlers.
I like my team stat for zeros. How many zeros have I made?
Zero?
Zero.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've made some zeros.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The weirdest thing that has happened to me recently in a Civ game is that I had a runaway Civ going for a diplomacy victory, and if it was selected as the head of the World Congress one more time, it was going to win. But all the AIs, other than that one, voted for the person with the second most votes, which happened to be me. So I ended up being the chair, even though somebody else had more votes, which I've never seen the AI do before.
Yeah, they will randomly vote for somebody else when they think it's a bad idea to let the person win.
Hey, that's a very good thing.
Yeah, they're actually
recognizing parents. I don't understand how important that change is in the Civ landscape. First time in any Civ game that I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah. It's still not sufficient.
Well, no, but it's a step in the right direction, and a very welcome one.
So on the feedback from episode 183, Shakita mentioned that he loves ancestor worship. He's been loving it since Brave New World. It's become his go-to pantheon if he's playing religiously and there's not a convincingly better resource-based pantheon. If you have piety, you can build shrines really quickly and get plus one culture without having to work a tile or worry about where you settle new cities. No matter what the landscape or whether you puppet or build them, you're going to get a nice combination of faith and culture from a cheap build.
Right, since adopting piety allows you to build shrines and temples in half the usual time. And ancestor worship gives you plus one culture from shrines. So yes, that kind of ties into what we were saying, how you can get your culture through piety. Mm-hmm. We weren't really down on ancestor worship. It was more about stronger choices in Brave New World. And, when he says, I'm playing religiously.
It's one of those fun things.
Stealth pun. Excellent.
Amazing.
I approve.
If Tana approves of a stealth pun, I'm so shocked.
It's really the only reason why I asked Mackie to read it on the show. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd believe it.
And yes, people, I'm still a regular co-host on the show.
There's this thing that he has. It's called Real Life, and yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of an accidental real life problem.
Oh no, real life.
Yeah, it was the combination of your not being on the show and then my saying, let's find a replacement. Had somebody worry.
Yeah.
The introductory theme to the song still had Imagine along with myself and Mackie, so...
Yeah, you're going to have to, in the future, say a temporarily replacement or something. Filling in for him today. Something.
Filling.
Filling.
Really?
Filling.
Really, Mackie?
Fill.
Really? Seriously?
That's how the phrase goes, yes.
Yeah, this is barely a pun.
I think with that, it's the end of the show.
The end of the show?
Yeah. Look at that segue.
We're not at zero. We're at 184 episodes of Polycast, and that is a number much larger than zero. I'm pretty sure that we have some other people here besides me, but I can't verify that for sure. If we did, though, one of them would be the me and team.
Nope, zero. Zero of the me and teams.
Oh, well, maybe one of them is Makalua.
No, I think she's left the building for more coffee. Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably for the best. One of them probably is Mad Jin.
I'm trying to trip Mackie and get the coffee first.
Nope.
And I think we talked about somebody named Dan earlier, but I don't remember.
To dominate, you must nominate.
Also, I may or may not be here. I am Peng Chi, and that's the end.
Yeah, making the AI less like women.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mackie moans because she knows it's true.
You happened to say that right as I took a sip of coffee, so I couldn't go, what the hell, Dan?
Well timed.
Timing is everything.
Whatever you're nuking, you probably don't need to like triple tap it most of the time.
Depends on how big it is.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
I was thinking it, but I wasn't going to say it.
I was thinking about it, too.
And Mac's sigh sounded a lot happier this time than it did last time.
That's kind of like I was just waiting. Who's going to say it? Who's going to say it?
Oh, there's two sides to every coin.
Two coins to every shut up. That's right.
Your mom.
There we go. Quota for this podcast, Matt.
Increase the chance of a city-state conquest if that city-state is a neighbor on your way to get to a targeted major power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They should call that the Germany hates the Netherlands provision.
Not better quota for Politicast.
Yep. But yeah, extra everything doesn't help. Or it doesn't hurt.
Extra everything doesn't help. Take that.
You'll still lose. So if you have to buy 1,000 tiles, you can find out how many you have actually bought in the game so far.
Did you just say bought?
I did. It's an achievement.
Achievement unlocked. Fail at grammar.
See how often we can do this until Dan breaks.
That's just Magic's way of trying to get Lisa back on the show.
Maybe you can make a separate remix of just people saying, gosh.
No, that's the entire episode 184. Just an hour of us doing that.
Yeah, that'll go over well.
And it's titled, gosh.
In 2014, does April the 1st fall on a Saturday? Let's see. No, it doesn't.
Well, shit.
Part of this conversation is going to make it into the blooper reel now.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, good. Now, Phil said gosh, too. Now, everyone, I've got everyone saying gosh.
As soon as he said this is going to find the blooper reel, I had to throw my hat in on the nonsense.
Record date October 5th, 2013. Civilization 1 clips copyright Microprose Software Incorporated. Sid Meier interview clips copyright Discovery Communications.
Pull my finger.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.